Welcome to CRE Radio with Howard Klein. Our focus is commercial real estate, exploring vital questions, confronting commercial landlords, property and asset managers, investors, brokers, tenants, and anyone providing services to the industry. Your host is Howard Klein. His commercial real estate practice over 35 years has concentrated on broker, leasing, and property management issues. CRE Radio broadcasts are presented with the sole intent of educating listeners. Howard and his guests are specifically not offering legal advice. If you need legal advice, consult your own counsel. CRE Radio is available live and downloadable anytime at creradio.com. Call in during the live show with your comments or questions, 619-393-6492. Then press 1 to be placed in queue. And now, here's Howard Klein.
Hello, this is Howard Klein, and welcome to our show, CRE Radio. And today's show is going to be about protecting the commercial tenant through education. I like to call it lease administration, the NRTA way. Today, we have quite a few speakers, all of whom will be attending and speaking at the National Retail Tenants Association annual conference in Palm Desert on October 7th through 10th at the Desert Springs Marriott in Palm Desert, California. Wonderful venue to attend this event. Now, just briefly, I'm going to tell you that this is a must-do event for any tenant who has commercial real estate leases, which by definition means that they do. This conference will give you as much knowledge as you will need to properly protect your interests. Who are not only going to speak about what's going to be happening at the conference, but probably more importantly, you're going to be speaking about their topics. And we're going to go into a little bit of detail about the topics that they're going to speak about. Why don't we start off the show right off the bat with Debbie Revelle at GAP. Debbie is the Director of Landlord Audit for the GAP. In her current role, Debbie is responsible for managing and settling lease audits for approximately 3,000 Gap, Old Navy, Banana Republic Outlet, and Athletica stores. And she's going to be talking about, well, why don't we let her tell us? Debbie, I understand that you're going to be speaking at the NRTA conference. What are you going to be talking about this year?
I'm presenting a class on utilities and trash.
See, now,
is that exciting?
Yeah, no, if that were
that,
me.
Actually, and I have a little discussion group on co-tenancy, so I have all the hot topics.
That's, now, I don't want to tell you how to do your business, but if it were me, I'd walk in with a garbage pail full of trash.
That's how
I would start out, and that's my personality. You're going to be talking about trash and
Utilities.
Trash and utilities.
Our focus for that, yeah, and predominantly electric. What we're trying to convey to the attendees is that when you are billed directly by a landlord for consumables, you really need to check your lease and check the calculations, because you want to make sure that the landlord's adhering to the provisions that were negotiated. And a lot of times you may have some really good language in those provisions that state that you shouldn't be billed any more than you would pay if you contracted directly with a trash hauler or a utility company. And you really want to do your due diligence and make sure that the charges by the landlord are in compliance with that requirement. You know, when we pay bills, even our household bills, you know, you're expecting you're being billed on your usage, and that's what you pay. It should be the same with the landlord. There shouldn't be any profits. This is my usage, this is the rate, and this is what I should pay for electricity. And, you know, I think a lot of us retailers, we focus a lot, when we audit, we focus on CAM and insurance and taxes, because those seem to be the hot items. And we don't really scrutinize utilities as much as we should, because more and more, I think, the leases provide for the landlord to build the utilities. So it's a whole... it could potentially be a whole new profit center for a landlord. Hopefully it's not, but you have to just make sure So that's what the course is going to is designed to address. You know, ways to go about analyzing your expenses, comparing them to what maybe you would pay if you've got your own trash hauler or you paid directly to your utility company, and just making sure everything is in compliance and makes sense.
So you would actually, in order to as an administrator, you would have to actually audit trash removal services and utilities to be able to compare what the landlord is charging you versus what you could get for your services independently. Is that correct?
Yes. What we do is, I think a lot of the bigger retailers probably have a national provider, especially for trash, because they probably have a majority of stores where they provide their own trash service through their national provider. So what I would recommend to start this whole process, and you know, as a good starting place, is just reach out to the provider you have that provides trash to your locations and ask them to benchmark and get you comparable billings and estimates for the stores you're looking at that are landlord billed. And that's a good starting place to benchmark. I mean, you may be surprised and everything may be in alignment. What you would pay direct is close to what the landlord's billing, and you move on to the next center. Or you may see some significant variances that need explanation. And at that point, you just reach out to the landlord and try to understand why there is a variance. Because one would think if a landlord is providing trash for an entire shopping center, they should be able to get it at a lower cost than one tenant trying to provide trash only for their store.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I think it's just, yeah, I mean, it's just a very practical approach. Okay. It's almost similar to us at home when we bid out our insurance. You know, your car insurance is too high. You go to three different insurance companies and get a bid. Then maybe you go back to your current insurance company and say, listen, I got these bids for the same service. Can you explain to me why it's so high? And a lot of times your current insurance company will say, oh, you know what? Yeah, we should have gave you these discounts, so here we're reducing your rate. Same approach, just trying to understand the difference and come to a good resolution for both parties.
Yeah, this may be a benefit to the landlord also, because it unless the landlord's seeking to have these expenses more of a profit center. If that's not their intention, then their motivation is really to keep their expenses as low as possible because it makes their property more marketable.
Correct.
You know, at least
maybe they haven't bid it out, and maybe by the tenant approaching them with some information, they say, you know what, we have to do our due diligence. When was the last time we bid out that service? Maybe we can get a better deal. You
sure.
know, you're absolutely correct. It may just be that everybody is so busy and sometimes you don't have time to scrutinize areas that you should.
Well, yeah, if you're in a 500,000 square foot mall or something like that, and you find out that your trash removal for your store alone is less expensive than it would be as your proportionate share of the trash removal for the whole center, then there's something clearly wrong. I mean, because,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know what it is? I think that you have to investigate it from a really, the landlords have to be transparent. So my issue is, well, maybe my competitive bid doesn't cover all the trash services I'm actually receiving. Or maybe, you know, there's more frequent pickups than the bid I received. So that's where you work with your landlord and say, okay, this is the bid I received from these outside haulers. You know, we usually will look at three different bids that we get for that one store, and we'll give all the information to the landlord and we'll say, this is what we asked them to go to the store to understand what we would need. Here's exactly what they said we would need, you know, this many pickups, this many times a week, recycling and all the different components. So explain to us what you're providing and why there's such a big difference in the two. Because, you know, it's interesting as you dive into it, learning about all different, you know, there's wet trash, dry trash, there's the process in which they recycle. There's a lot of different components to trash that I think a lot of retailers really don't know because we don't deal with it every day. So it's definitely a learning process. But I think if everybody just puts their cards on the table, you can understand what's going on and how to resolve any significant variances. And that's what we're trying to teach the attendees for that class, whether it's electricity or trash. You need to have a practical approach, gain an understanding of why there's a difference between what you're finding and what the landlord's billing, and then go from there.
Thank you, Debbie. We're going to come back after these short messages, at which time we're going to talk a little bit about co-tenancy and occupancy provisions.
Go mobile with The Analyst. When the deal changes, and you know it will, be ready whenever, wherever to update property reports with The Analyst. Multi-page analysis in seconds sent straight from your mobile device to your client's email. Environmental summaries delivered right to your iPhone or iPad in as little as 10 minutes. Free from your desk at last with The Analyst. Log on to creradio.com for Howard's comments, his one-on-one with developer Todd Kuhlman, and links to The Analyst. Techniques Marketing has perfected exciting new ways to increase your revenue with all your key accounts, way beyond mere trial and error. And we've done it for some of the biggest companies in America. Look, if you're happy with your numbers, great. If not, let's talk. Visit TechniquesMarketing.com, T-E-C-H, that's the tech, N-I-Q-U-E-S, there's the Neeks, TechniquesMarketing.com.
This is Commercial Real Estate Radio with Howard Klein. If you have a question or a comment for Howard or his guests, please call 619-393-6492. That's area 619-393-6492. Then press 1 to be placed in queue.
Welcome back to CRE Radio. And we have with us Debbie Revell from The Gap. So, Debbie, what else are you going to be talking about at the NRTA conference?
We'll be presenting a discussion group around co-tenancy and operating and opening requirements we have within our leases. It's an open forum with about 25 to 30 participants just to really discuss different issues that arise when you're reviewing occupancy levels, different situations you may have come into, or lease language, if you know how you handle certain provisions and deal with the landlords and work with the landlords to understand how to evaluate the occupancy levels.
Oh, yeah. I'm embarrassed to say that this is a really interesting topic, or at least for someone like me or anyone else who's involved in commercial real estate leasing with a landlord or tenant. But Joe Hall and I don't know if you recall, we did a radio show a short while ago where we talked about co-tenancy and use clauses and exclusives.
Because there's a very close relationship between those provisions. But Joel has like an 8-page co-tenancy and exclusive provision that he puts into the landlord's lease. Now, how do you deal with something like that? Because I was listening to him and going, wow, you know, I get it. But how do you deal with that? On the other hand, he's trying to, by his language, he's trying to be very clear. And the part of the problem with the co-tenancy and exclusive provisions and use provisions is clarity. It's like, well, right, how do you define what people can sell? Well, it can only be women's wear. Well, what does that mean? And what if things change? So he's trying to tackle clarity, and which is a pretty big topic. But this is going to be, in my opinion, because the larger national retailers, such as The Gap, really are looking for not only, you know, some sort of exclusivity and co-tenancy provisions, but it's becoming more and more important, which is now going to start affecting the smaller tenants more and more and more, and they have to deal with it.
Co-tenancy used to be a couple of paragraphs in a lease because nobody anticipated what happened in late 2008, 2009, and they didn't anticipate all the bankruptcies and the excessive vacancy levels. So they didn't really pay attention to the detail in those provisions, and there was a lot of gray areas. And to your point, you know, which now leads to 8-page provisions, so that you try to address any questions before they even arise about suitable replacements, and you know what type of tenant can be put in the place of a vacating tenant. And it really has become a whole new area to audit and to try to keep track of and to maintain databases to encompass what's in those 8 pages. What are all the different parameters we need to check when we look at this? You know, how do we analyze it? And more importantly, how do we get the information to ensure that those 8 pages of protocol are being met? I mean, that's the biggest challenge. If you don't have the capability to walk a lot of these centers and understand who's there and who's not, tenants have to, you know, through the years, we've had to come up with more sophisticated ways to monitor everything. Because 2008, 2009, you know, it was an eye-opener. And all of a sudden, you have this portfolio of leases, and nobody really scrutinized those provisions. And how do you do it when times are crazy and you don't have any more manpower? So it was, you know, it's an initiative that everybody took on, and now here we are a couple of years later, and we say we don't want that history to repeat itself. So how do we make sure that our day-to-day business still watches all of these things, you know, and how do we build that into what we do in the audit world?
Well, Debbie, I'd like to thank you for joining me. I expect to see you out at Palm Desert.
Yes, I will be conference in October.
Yeah, do that.
Looking
we'll be there.
To it.
I've been fortunate enough to ask to be the luncheon keynote speaker. And I just might.
Really?
Yeah, and I just might bring some garbage in with me, just as an honor
there
to
you.
Go. Or what I might do, we've started doing is we've started creating a comic strip, making fun of ourselves, but also dealing with, you know, commercial real estate issues. So somewhere along the lines, there has to be a comic strip that includes you and garbage.
Oh, that's funny.
And it may make it to the keynote. We'll see.
Okay, I don't know. That would be really funny. I would get a good laugh out of it. I could take it.
Good, because we'll make fun of you. Now, that was a nice interview. We're going to dust ourselves off and get the garbage off of us, and then take a little step back with Paul Kinney, the National Director of the NRTA, who is going to take a little time to explain what's going to be going on this year at the NRTA conference, as well as what the programs are and what's a little bit different this year from last. So, Roger, why don't we hear from some of the people here who pay the bills around here, okay?
Here's an exciting new tool for brokers and investors, RateBlend. RateBlend is a powerful online rent calculator that's quick and easy to use. Print and send detailed effective rent analysis with a single click. RateBlend is easy to read, so what does your spreadsheet mean goes away. RateBlend is accessible from your computer or any mobile device. Log on to creradio.com for Howard's comments, his one-on-one with developer Andrew Bermudez, and links to RateBlend. Try it today.
This is Commercial Real Estate Radio with Howard Klein. If you have a question or a comment for Howard or his guests, please call 619-393-6492. That's area 619-393-6492. Then press 1 to be placed in queue.
Okay, so welcome back to CRE Radio. And why don't we hear from Paul Kinney right now? Paul, why don't you give us a quick overview of this year's NRTA conference in Palm Desert, California, and what's going to be different this year than perhaps the prior years?
Okay. The first thing is that this is our 17th conference. We started in 96, and we're going into 2012. And this year, we have the most programs or most courses than we've ever had. We're going to have 67 hour-and-a-half sessions broken down into six separate tracks, educational tracks. There's going to be an office track, lease administration, occupancy cost control, real estate, legal, and professional development. And each one of these tracks will have anywhere from 3 to 13 courses for an hour and a half. And the beauty of this program, as we have for the last 10 years, is we have several concurrent sessions. For example, we could have as many as 9 sessions in the same hour and a half. So anybody who comes to our conference, whether they be a lease administrator or a real estate executive, financial person, office tenant, whatever the case may be, there's going to be enough educational courses for them in every hour of the day. And when you think about it, there aren't too many other seminars that have 67 hour and a half sessions. And the vast majority of them are going to be classroom topics where we'll have PowerPoints, have a chance for them to ask questions. But we also have about 17 discussion groups where individuals come in and we'll have a maximum of 25 people at each one of these sessions to be able to bring their issues and their problems on various topics. For example, it could be the corporate culture, it could be acquisitions, it could be tools, how to use tools and websites more effectively, managing outside counsel, which would be near and dear to your house,
Howard. You can't manage.
No, you can't. You know, co-tenancy, which Debbie Revelle will talk to you about, sure. Store closings and so forth. So we have a wide variety of topics. And what's really unique about this year is that we have really said, the board has said, we want to get into the office area. And Rick Burke, I'm sure, covered that very well.
Yes, he did.
But we do have several office courses that are going to hit the office tenants. And the nice thing about it is you might have 8 courses or 8-9 time frames you can go to with 7 office courses. You still have other courses that will mean something to you, like basic negotiations or operating costs in the law or developments in real estate law. So there's so much more information than we've ever had before. And the nice thing about these 67 classrooms sessions is you're going to learn from people who are in your business. The vast majority of our speakers, we don't pay any speaker, the vast majority of them come from the commercial real estate or office side of the business or our affiliates, attorneys who spend most of their time working with tenants. And it's a perfect opportunity for everyone to benchmark their lease administration methods, the way they pay their bills, to really get the best out of all different types of individuals. And they can evaluate existing their capabilities and look at new ways of saving money and doing things better. And last but not least is we'll have a trade show of about 20 vendors that will offer their products and services in 2 separate sessions where they can walk around and talk to these vendors about their services and products. And we have, you know, vendors from software, auditing, CAM charges, excess space individuals, energy consultants, tax consultants, environmental consultants, and property management consultants. So anyone who's looking for any type of services that are out there for commercial office or retail tenants, they're going to be able to talk to them. And the nice thing about our show versus a large show like the NRF or the ICSC, you don't have 300, 400 vendors and you never get a chance to see them. You'll have 8 to 20 vendors where you can spend time with them, set up a meeting, do some follow-ups with them that makes it much more meaningful. So, you know, we're excited about it. When we started this 18 years ago, we thought we'd, try to improve the lease administration education of our various companies, and it just has exploded and exploded. To give you an example, This year, again, right now, we have 394 people who have signed up for the course, for the conference, and we're still two months away. Of those 394, we have 83 first-time attendees. Okay, which is 21%, and I'm sure we'll be more than 100 first-time attendees. That doesn't mean they're new to real estate. It means that the first time they ever attended our conference, they could be a vice president who's decided to see what we're all about before he invests or she invests in bringing a lot of their people. But we always seem to have 100 people who are there for the first time, and typical retail tenants, next year, they might not go, but they'll send somebody different or they'll send another person. One of the things that we're putting together right now on our website is that we are interviewing, six companies that have more than 10 people coming to our conference. Chick-fil-A, Chipotle Grill, Dollar General, Foot Locker, Ann Taylor, Panda Restaurant Group has 8. So, and that's a lot of people to send to a conference. So there must be a merit and there must be some benefit to training your people.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Any special favorite that you have in this year's conference?
I absolutely think that the office track is a win-win. We need to get more office and commercial tenants to join our organization. We're not just retail, because many of the issues that a retailer has, everyone else has also. It's just a little twist on things.
Sure.
And I think Rick in his track leadership is going to bring that forward. But I absolutely think that is paramount. And the other thing is that networking is getting better and better every year. And I can still remember when I was a retail real estate executive, I can still remember talking to my staff about a particular store or a particular landlord and say, why don't you call the Gap out in California? Why don't you talk to Chipotle? Why don't you talk to McDonald's? Why don't you talk to so-and-so? Because if you're an NRTA member, they'll talk to you. Okay, and we talk about basic issues and basic problems that can be resolved. So the networking just becomes better and better every year. And when we talk to some of these 80-plus people who are the first-time attendees, they say to us all the time, I can't believe that somebody else has the same problems because they've never had an opportunity to get into that position.
So let me ask you this question. Who can attend? Do you have to be a member of the NRTA? How does that work out?
No, absolutely you do not. Now, it's a benefit if you were a member, because by joining, if you were a retail or a commercial tenant, you pay $175 a year for membership, which gives you a lot more things than other than the conference. But if you are a member, you save $200 on your membership. As a matter of fact, we get people on your conference. So we get people who call us and want to go to the conference and pay $1,050, and they're willing to do that. Well, I personally call every one of them and said, well, if you become a member today and go to the conference, I'll reimburse you $50. Because now you'll be a member, and I guarantee you once you're a member, you'll stay a member. Becoming a member really does make sense. And you know, right now the conference for a member is $875. If you're a non-member, it's $1,100. So it doesn't make sense to not become a member.
You might as well just become a member and go to the conference.
Yeah. You know, a classic example, Howard, is that one of the things that we do every year is we award scholarships to members' children who are going on to school. And in order to be eligible for a scholarship, the person has to be an active member of the association. We just gave out $1,000 scholarships to three of our members' children. No financial proof. All it is your two letters of recommendation, your SAT scores, where you're going to school, and as long as you're going to a university, college, any organization, higher education, we're willing to give them $1,000. And that's just one benefit that the members see. And there's others. The others is one of the other ones is you get a complete name, address, phone number of all the other 575 members that you can get on the phone and talk to at any point in time about anything. And they do respond. They do respond if you're an NRTA member. And one of the other benefits, I mean, it seems silly, but one of the other benefits is we have a relationship with CRE Radio, and that benefits everyone. Because even though the topics might not be, and every time you do a show, related to lease administration, it's related to real estate, it's related to real life, it's related to the issues that everybody should care about.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Well, Paul, thank you very much for being on the radio and describing to us what this year's conference is going to be about. I'd like to take a brief moment just to say, if you are a tenant and you don't know everything, you don't know everything about your leases, about how to manage the lease, how to negotiate the lease, you gotta be a fool not to take the opportunity to participate with the NRTA and go to this conference. I really, truly do believe that this is going to be a strong benefit to you, and it's going to help you save money. Now, let's hear from some of our sponsors, and when we come back, we're going to hear from Greg Ankeman. And Greg is going to be talking about, to a great extent, construction matters and going green for retailers. This is a very interesting topic for us and we're going to be doing a show later on in November specifically about this topic.
Here's an exciting new tool for brokers and investors, RateBlend. RateBlend is a powerful online rent calculator that's quick and easy to use. Print and send detailed effective rent analysis with a single click. RateBlend is easy to read, so what does your spreadsheet mean goes away. RateBlend is accessible from your computer or any mobile device. Log on to creradio.com for Howard's comments, his one-on-one with developer Andrew Bermudez, and links to RateBlend. Try it today.
And now a short but sweet radio tweet. Do you know the difference between a sublease and an assignment? Well, from a legal perspective, the difference between a sublease and an assignment is that an assignment is a transfer of the entire leasehold estate, lock, stock, and barrel, where a sublease is an assignment of something less than the entire leasehold estate. Now, what do I mean by something less than the entire leasehold estate? Well, that could be a transfer of 8 years out of 9 years remaining on the lease, or it could be 8,000 square feet out of a 10,000 square foot lease. There are all kinds of other different options that can draw those distinctions, but those are some of the most obvious.
If you need anything with your company logo on it, you need Monogram Magic. T-shirts, ball caps, polo shirts, anything. Monogram Magic does it beautifully, does it right, and does it right on time. For over 20 years, Monogram Magic has produced corporate apparel your people will be proud to wear. Large orders or small, it's all about attention to detail. See for yourself. Here's the website, logostolife.com. That's LOGOS, the number 2, then LIFE.com, logostolife.com.
Let's now talk to Greg Ankeman, who's an attorney out of Oakland, who will be talking at the NRTA conference on two different topics. Greg, why don't you tell us about those?
Two courses I'm speaking on is one that's called Build a Store. It's about construction issues and leases. And the other one is called the bottom line benefits of being green. It's regarding green construction, green operations for retailers.
Greg, why don't we talk a little bit about the green retailer?
Okay.
Okay, so tell us about the benefits of going green.
So the one great thing about the green course is we've got, besides me, the panelists include an in-house architect with Starbucks, who's been at the forefront of the green construction movement, and then Kohl's representative, who's their director of of sustainability who's really in charge of their green operations. So we've got two of the industry leaders in green construction and in green operation practices. And what we're going to focus on is, as the title suggests, bottom line benefits of being green. So we're not just going to talk about the warm, fuzzy things. We should do this because it's the right thing.
Right.
Which of course, many of us believe it is. But we're going to really focus on how this is yet another way that retailers can save and make money by looking at how they can reduce their energy costs, their recycling benefits, and of course there are all kinds of PR benefits to customers and to employees, and both of these companies have been leaders in that area, and so they're very different sizes of stores and types of stores, so I think we can present a really wide perspective that will be useful to all kinds of retailers.
Now, this is going to be primarily from the perspective of the retailer, correct? Not the landlord.
That's correct. But we will too be from the perspective of the retail. But of course, we will talk about how we need to work with our landlords to make these things happen. And my piece on it is being sure that leases and construction contracts are properly negotiated and drafted to set up whatever green measures and initiatives that the retailer wants to adopt now or in the future, as well as kind of giving an update on what's happening in the regulatory world and with respect to some of the private rating groups like LEED rating is the best known. And so we're going to talk about all those things and do kind of a case study approach where we're going to work through a lot of real world examples that major national retailers are adopting with an idea that we can all learn from what others are doing, what's been working, what lessons they've learned from their successes and failures. We'll look at these two retailers, but also look at other retailers who are doing things. So the other topic is construction. We've titled the course Build a Store, and it's also a great panel that includes an in-house architect and an in-house attorney along with me. We thought and they're both very seasoned in the retail leasing world and particularly dealing with construction issues. And so we're going to be looking at things that attorneys, paralegals, lease negotiators, lease administrators, and construction and design people for retailers need to think about as they approach the retail lease provisions and exhibits regarding the construction process. And a lot of it's in an exhibit at the end of the lease, and by the time people get there, they're tired and they don't give it enough attention. But it's of course very important. As if you have a very unpleasant surprise if you thought, as a tenant, if you thought the landlord was going to build something a certain way and have certain responsibilities and you would have certain rights with what you could build, and that's not what that construction exhibit says. So we're going to talk about how to be sure that the landlord's and tenant's construction responsibilities and rights match what the tenant's expecting, and will allow the tenant's prototype, its operation, and of course to deal with timing, so that timing can be critical for when tenants are getting open. If the construction is delayed, everything is delayed.
Sure.
And that can cost a lot of money. So we're going to talk about how to address that in the lease, and again, have a lot of real world practical examples.
No, that's going to be a great guy. It's funny that you mentioned that. When I was director of real estate in the 80s, where for a vocational school chain, we stored our own carpeting, et cetera, and then would ship it out, but we would never do our own construction. We would have the landlord do the construction because we didn't have a construction company. We had only a couple of hundred locations. And invariably, I would get done with the lease, and then the work letter often took much longer to work out on the details, partly because I was dependent upon the architects and everybody else to give me the information I needed to include in the work letter.
Right, right. And since this is a kind of multidiscipline topic, that's one of the reasons we brought both an architect and an in-house lawyer here, so we can talk about how we get that done, how the different team members who need to contribute here can work together to be sure it's done on a timely basis and done properly. I was going to say, on another thing we're covering in the construction course is something that's kind of a relatively new issue, which is addressing payment issues and even security for construction allowances. It used to, until the recent economic changes and problems in the financing and real estate market, nobody really thought all that much about it. Is this big national landlord with a successful shopping center going to be able to pay me the construction allowance that we've agreed to? It was just kind of a given. But that's not the world we live in anymore. So now tenants who are receiving allowances of any size and have any clout are negotiating, thinking about and negotiating protections to be sure they get paid and they have proper remedies and even security. And that's something that just nobody ever really thought about, and certainly landlords weren't giving to speak of. So we're going to talk about those topics too that I think are very timely.
That's a very important topic. Most of the work that I do is representing lenders who foreclose on properties, shopping centers, et cetera. So I get to deal with these issues afterwards, and most of the time I tell the tenant you're SOL.
And you often are if you haven't protected yourself somehow up front.
In that regard, I'd like to tell the story about the time where I was representing the lender after they foreclosed on property. And they were approached by one of the existing tenants who was demanding a rent set off for their TIs that weren't paid by the original builder. And in that particular case, I reviewed the documents, and it seemed clear to me that since the tenant was attorneying to the lender who ended up buying the property at a foreclosure sale, we were obligated to provide to them that rent credit. So it was a smart negotiation by the tenant prior to the foreclosure. I would also like to take this opportunity to mention to everybody that I am going to be at the NRTA conference as well as CRE Radio. But during the luncheon, I will be giving the keynote, and that keynote will be on the topic of why lease administrators should be part of the team that helps negotiate the leases. And we're going to be providing a kind of a multimedia presentation, a little bit unusual, hopefully somewhat entertaining and informative. So we look forward to doing that. By the way, if you have any interesting stories that would help describe the scenarios, the worst-case scenarios perhaps, or even something that might be funny, indicating why a lease administrator should have been involved in a prior lease negotiation, maybe I'll have the opportunity to use that example during the keynote. So now, why don't we hear from one of our sponsors, after which we're going to hear from Muzz Birdie, who will be describing some really, really interesting courses in the real estate track, which he is the leader of.
Go mobile with The Analyst. When the deal changes, and you know it will, be ready whenever, wherever to update property reports with The Analyst. Multi-page analysis in seconds sent straight from your mobile device to your client's email. Environmental summaries delivered right to your iPhone or iPad in as little as 10 minutes. Free from your desk at last with The Analyst. Log on to creradio.com for Howard's comments, his one-on-one with developer Todd Kuhlman, and links to The Analyst. This is Commercial Real Estate Radio with Howard Klein. If you have a question or a comment for Howard or his guests, please call 619-393-6492. That's area 619-393-6492. 6492, then press 1 to be placed in queue.
Welcome back to CRE Radio. I'd like to remind everybody, if you have any comments or questions, you can always get a hold of us at any time by sending a tweet to us at CRE Radio or sending a question to us at questions@creradio.com. very easy to get a hold of us, and you might even make it onto the radio show with one of your questions and comments. So let's hear from Muzz Birdie, who, when he started the conversation to me, started joking about his last name, Birdie, which he thought was apropos for me since it relates to golf. Unfortunately, I don't recognize anything called Birdie. I would have been more, or probably would have been more apropos to mention something about bogey or double bogey, but certainly not Birdie. So, Muzz, why don't you tell us what's going to be going on?
I have 8 courses in the real estate track, which I can share with you which they are.
Would you please?
First one would be a mock real estate committee. What that means, Howard, is when a deal maker or a real estate manager takes a lease or a sale deal to the committee for approval. You know, what is the procedure that the committee goes through to evaluate a deal, whether it's a lease deal or a sale deal? And most of them are lease deals, but sometimes when a retailer does want to sell a location, it still needs real estate committee approval. So basically, this particular session, you know, will have a committee person, a retailer, a real estate manager, and then a deal maker. And the deal maker basically will, you know, submit the deal from where the store begins, you know, how the leases arrived, et cetera. And so that would be what we would call a mock real estate committee. Second one is sales modeling and market planning, you know, which then pertains to how does a retailer model the sales? Because before a lease is signed, the retailer and the landlord, both, and the developer, if this is a new store being developed, they need to project sales, because for any retailer, rent is the percentage of sales. In the restaurant business, you know, a rule of thumb would be that your rent should be between 5 to 7%. For groceries, you know, rent needs to be no more than 1.5% of sales, because it's a very low margin business. For jewelers, which is the highest margin business, you know, rent can be up to 15, 18, 20% of sales because the margins are so high. So before a lease is signed and before a rent is agreed to, you know, what is the procedure that a retailer goes through to model sales and market planning? So that is another excellent, you know, internal, all these, both of these, Howard, are what we would call internal working. You know, of a retailer. No retailer is going to divulge the fiduciary information or the private proprietary information. So these will be general mock sessions, but still it will go through the actual process of how a real estate committee goes through to approve a location and arrive at sales modeling. The third one would be excess property program. You know, from time to time, retailers by design, intentionally or unintentionally, close stores. You know, an intentional sales would be if sales are low or the market has shifted, the retailer wants to vacate a market, they will intentionally close a store, you know, or unintentionally would be the market shifts. You know, just because a location worked 5, 7, 10 years ago doesn't mean it's always going to be strong. You know, you could have a very strong location, but all of a sudden a Walmart comes catty corner across from you or you know, a mile away from you, and your market shifts. So this program is called development of an excess property program, meaning when you have an excess store or a surplus store, also called a dark store, how do you dispose, meaning how do you sublease or how do you sell a closed store? The fourth one kind of piggybacks on this excess program. It's called, you know, distressed property, deferred maintenance, and default notices, meaning that if you have a property that you're going to close or if a property is distressed, how do you manage that surplus property or distressed property? You know, what does the retailer do internally?
Now, I've got to imagine you're going to be talking about go dark provisions, which become very important when you're talking about a tenant's excess properties and leases.
Fifth one actually is called strategic value in lease renewals, when a lease comes up for renewal, what are the processes a retailer goes through to evaluate, one, should we renew the lease or should we not renew the lease and close the store? If we renew the lease, what rent should we pay? Just because a lease renewal may have a stipulated rent, that doesn't mean that the retailer has to honor that. The retailer can easily go back to the landlord and say, look, you know, we will renew, but not for the conditions as set forth in our lease. If you're willing to negotiate in good faith, lower our rent or give us some TI dollars or do something for us, landlord, we will consider renewing. You know, if not, we hereby give you notice that we're closing the store. So that topic called creating strategic value in lease renewals goes through how a retailer's committee. A lease renewal committee is generally separate from a new store committee. You know, what processes do they go through to lease renewal? Number seven would be setting up an effective, scalable, and efficient real estate department. NRT has many member companies or members that are small companies. You know, they could have 5 to 10 stores, 15 to 20 stores, or certainly less than 50 stores. You know, not every retailer is the, you know, 800-pound gorilla, Dollar General that has 10,000 stores, you know, or a Walmart that has 5,000 stores. So for these smaller retailers, whether they have 10, 15, 20, you know, under 100 stores, how do you set up a real estate department for a small company to administer leases, perform legal functions, do lease audits, etc.? So you know, we have a panel of, you know, three retailers.
I know that there are companies out there, third-party companies, that will act as your lease administrator if you're a small company. Mm-hmm. Are there companies out there that can serve as your real estate committee? You know, basically, I could imagine that there'd be a company out there and says, look, we will be your real estate committee. We will be your real estate department, not just a broker.
Absolutely. No, you're 100%. You know, this really came about more so within the past 5 to 7 years, kind of when the recession started or even before then, that when retailers started to cut back on in-house real estate people, because as the recession came about, all of a sudden there was no need to develop new stores. So all of a sudden you had one department, meaning the development department of a retailer, just gone, you know, just shut down, because between pretty much when the recession hit, between 2007 to 2009 to 2010, very little development was done. When you're not growing and you're pruning and by design closing stores, now all of a sudden, you know, if you close 20, 30, 40, 50 stores a year, you may need a few lease admin people to administer your leases. So that brought about this outsourcing of real estate departments that you mentioned. And the way that function is now, instead of having 5 to 10 people in a real estate department, that the smaller retailers would have 1 to 2 real estate managers. And they would call a meeting once a month whereby this outsourced real estate department, which is basically an offshoot of companies, you know, real estate management companies such as mine, NAI Global, and I'm not the only one, obviously. You've got Colliers who does that. You have CBRE. And then as the retailers wanted more services, such as lease audit, such as legal, such as development, then these companies added on people on their own staff and became an outsourced real estate department to the retailers. So what then would happen, that in once a year, this outsourced company would take 3 or 4 or 5 of its people. You would have the deal maker, you have the manager, you have the lease admin, you would have the lease auditor, go to the retailer's headquarters and hold its monthly real estate department meeting in the retailer's headquarters, but everyone except for the real estate manager would be outsourced.
And that makes sense. It is just the exact opposite of property management and asset management from the perspective of the landlord. The theory being is that the third party outsourcing, because you're it's volume. It becomes much more volume, and you could save money.
Right, but as correct as you are, Howard, the key word is when the recession hit, retailers had to reduce headcount. What I mean by headcount is number of employees on the payroll. They were willing to pay for the services to an independent contractor, a la an outsourced real estate department.
Right.
Okay, but that was at the expense of reducing headcount. So your statement is correct, and so now a real estate manager, especially if you're a public company, during the recession, what are you doing to control costs? Well, we reduced our headcount. Well, how did you reduce your headcount? Well, we now outsource the real estate services that we previously had in-house. Now we outsource it. Keep in mind that the dollars paid for the services could have still been the same or maybe slightly reduced. But the key was the reduction in headcount, which the retailer could justify to its board that, you know, we, like any other company, have trimmed our expenses in these difficult times.
But it also, you know, you're talking about the large company. If you're talking about a company that's growing, that's got 5, 10, 15 locations, what it does is it gives them the opportunity to have the professional staff that it otherwise couldn't afford to have in-house.
Absolutely. And it's not only the staff, Howard, but it's the technology.
Technology, the professionalism.
You said it right.
Well, no, that's typical. Why would you, I mean, you would look at it in the legal business. It's very much the same. If you have a small business and you don't need in-house counsel, you outsource it. You pay more on an hourly basis.
Sure.
You know, hopefully you're saving money because you don't have to use them all. At some point in time, you get busy enough, it's much cheaper to bring someone in-house. But even when you bring someone in-house, they're still looking for outsource expertise.
Sure. Howard, these real estate companies that we just mentioned, you know, the big 5, 6, 7, I'm not exaggerating when I tell you that on annual basis, just for technology, each of these companies spend $300,000 to $400,000 to update technology for modeling, for GIS, which is geographical information systems, for planning, for demographics, for psychographics. So, you know, when you're spending $300,000 to $400,000 a year, because each year this data is updated, a retailer can't afford to do that unless you're a big one, the ones we mentioned. Then you're going to have your own in-house staff, your own in-house GIS, your own in-house technology, simply because you're growing at such a fast rate. You know, if Dollar General opens 600 stores a year, if Family Dollar opens 500 stores a year, they cannot outsource that. They may outsource part of a service, but to keep up that phenomenal store count, you have to have an in-house a department that works like a clock.
So how about another short but sweet radio tweet? And let's talk about assignment and subletting. Leaving everything else aside, the assignment and sublet clause or sublease clause within a lease is all about control. And the control issue relates to whether or not it's a retail or office lease. When the landlord attempts to restrict the tenant on assignment of subletting, the landlord is attempting to control the premises, and to some extent, those controls go as far as trying to control the tenant. The tenant, of course, is going to try to limit those controls. If there's no or little language in the sublease provision, there's very little controls. And we'll be talking about, and I'll be writing some more articles on that in my blog post called Commercial Property Herald. So let's now go to Rick Burke, who is the leader of the office tract at the NRTA conference this year. Good morning, Rick. How are you doing?
Oh, good, Howard.
Why don't we talk about the office lease administration and what it, you know, why NRTA is adding that separate track. It's not strictly retail, and what's different about office versus retail, and then that probably would segue very well into mixed use.
Yep.
So okay. That people would understand the significance. So, Rick, you were telling me that there's about a 75-25% difference between the audit process and how you handle CAM and other charges between office and retail tenants. So why don't you tell us really how that difference comes into play?
And the difference really comes into play when you're talking about office base years and gross up. Retailers don't have that, where office do. So what a base year is, your first year when you rent, the base year, the occupancy costs, the CAM costs, the operating expenses are included in the first year of rent. And going forward, you only pay your pro rata share above that cost. Where with retail, it's traditionally a triple net lease. So that's basically one of the differences between retail and office. So you have this base year function, this piece that you know, can change every year if you're not careful. So there's a whole auditing process on the base year, which you wouldn't necessarily get on the retail side. Also, there's a thing called gross up, and that's where the landlord can, you know, extrapolate or increase the expenses based on the level of occupancy of the building. Now, gross up was created because it was fair for both the landlord and the tenant. If a tenant moved into a building that wasn't fully occupied or a new building, then the base year could be grossed up, which would help the tenant in the long run. But later on down the road, the landlord, if the occupancy level dropped, they could increase the expenses to recoup some of those expenses. So in theory, it was a great idea for both the landlord and tenant. However, over the years, it's got abused a bit. So among utilities and office folk tend to clean their own space where retail folk don't. Utilities, the retailers a lot of times tend to pay their own utilities directly to the utility companies, and the office folks don't. There's a lot of differences like that. So we felt we wanted to open up the teaching to the office world because they need that experience and that help as well.
Yeah, some of the distinctions that you're drawing really do vary from region to region and even property to property, because I've handled leases where office leases where they have building operating expenses, which are treated in almost the exact same fashion as CAM charges, insurance, taxes, and retail. You know, sometimes you see more often in an office lease gross leases, which kind of gets rid of that portion of the issue, does it not?
Oh, yeah, it does. You have three types of, four types of office leases. You know, you can have a triple net lease, much like a retail lease. Most retail leases are triple net. And then you can have like a modified gross lease, or full service gross lease, which is 100% of all the costs. Are included in the rent. And then you can have what they call a modified gross lease, which includes a base year. There's all different variations of leases, but the majority of office leases have this base year in it. It's not total gross lease or full service gross lease. In retail, you can have a lease, or you can actually have a lease that's called an absolute net, which means that it's not only is it a triple net, but you could be paying for roof, structural, everything associated with that building, you would be paying.
Sure. Okay, now we're dealing with an extremely important point now. Please, whoever is listening, do not pay attention to whatever the title is of the lease. I cannot overstate the importance of this point. Whatever the lease says, if it's called net, triple net, gross, the language within the lease will dictate whatever those terms are. And if you think a gross, the title gross means something, or the title net means something, or triple net, you will most likely be wrong, because the lease will contain all kinds of specifics within it, which will totally blow out your understanding of what the lease is and what it's going to cost you.
And that becomes the problem from the administrator side. And that's why the NRTA and everything is in this whole lease administration world has become very, very technically complicated, because, you know, people are out there negotiating deals that are very elaborate and very complicated. And that's fine, and that's cool, and everybody's happy with that. And both parties walk away. But now you've got to administer that lease. And once you start administering these complicated, creative leases, what happens is someone, you know, gets the short end of the stick, or gets overcharged, or it doesn't get done properly.
Absolutely. And the key is more the language within the lease itself, which is a pretty difficult thing to do, is to understand the ramifications of each and every provision during the life of the lease, and how it affects your costs and how you operate within premises.
Oh, it's huge. if you took something as basic as utilities, well, that's a classic, because you're getting billed on a monthly basis. Say it's incorrect. Say the allocation is incorrect, or the landlord's billing for something that is a specific tenant versus a common area, and they're billing it to a tenant, and you're paying your pro rata share. Yes, the difference may only be, you know, $1,000, but that's $1,000 a month times 10 years of the term.
Sure.
Okay, so now you're looking at a very sizable amount of money. And that goes for a lot of the different expenses. We do a lot of lease auditing. My company does Lease Administration Solutions, does a lot of lease auditing. And we have audits, up in the millions of overcharges for tenants. And if you really look at it and sit back in a shopping center where you might have, 200 tenants, and here's one tenant that has over $1 million in the last 5-6 years for overcharges. That's significant money when you start playing out the numbers.
When we come back after these messages, we're going to talk to Rick a little bit about mixed-use properties and the issues that arise with regard to CAM charges and concerns that mixed-use property tenants should be paying attention to. We're also going to be concluding our show with Jennifer Romano, an attorney, who is going to be talking about litigation, and is going to put on this very interesting program that's going to be a little bit like a day in the life of an attorney, so that the attendees at the conference can better prepare themselves for any potential litigation that may come down the road.
Manage a shopping center? Always looking for new ideas? Tactics. Tactics Magazine is the idea magazine for shopping center marketing directors all over the world. Exciting promotions, gift with purchase programs, and full-blown ad campaigns. Every edition of Tactics is packed with features, ideas, and news you can use to get the word out and grow your numbers. How can you manage a shopping center without your tactics? Log on to tacticsmagazine.com. Today would be good. tacticsmagazine.com.
This is Commercial Real Estate Radio with Howard Klein. If you have a question or a comment for Howard or his guests, please call 619-393-6492. That's area 619-393-6492. Then press 1 to be placed in queue.
All right. Now, welcome back to CRE Radio, and we're talking to Rick Bird. Let's talk a little bit about mixed use and what are the unique concerns of lease auditing mixed use properties?
Well, there's a lot of issues. I mean, traditionally, I guess the issue is, you have this, the the sum of the parts are greater than the whole, is what it really comes down to. And so what happens is in traditional, you know, office-to-tenant allocation or a retail-to-tenant allocation, meaning there's one cost pool being allocated to multiple tenants. You have a one-to-many relationship. In that scenario, there's always been the opportunity to overlap or double charge or, you know, or make mistakes.
Sure.
Now with mixed use, you have this opportunity. You have multiple cost pools, possibly multiple ownerships with REA and reciprocal easement agreements and operating agreements. And that's being allocated to multiple tenants. So the opportunity to become aggressive and do things or make mistakes is it's easily done. And so some of the items that we run into, like we just had one, a parking garage. You know, you have a parking garage that's sitting in a downtown mixed use. And that's where a lot of these are because of the sort of live, work, and play trend that we're in right now. You have a parking garage, and that parking garage does a lot of different things. You know, it might be parking for the office in the daytime and the retail in the daytime and the nighttime. It may be near a baseball stadium like Fenway Park or something like that, and that may fill. You know, people may park there all night long, you know, for baseball games or to go around town. It might have a lot of uses to it.
Sure.
And so it has a lot of cost. So how do you allocate these costs? The office folks may be paying on a per space basis. So they, you know, if you're a tenant, you may have 100 spaces that you're paying, you know, $200-$300 a month for. Now it trickles down to the retailer. How do you allocate this cost to the retailer for the garage? Do you break out, the cost associated with people parking for the baseball game? Do you break out the cost, or do you net out the cost that the office folks are contributing to on a per space basis, and they pay, and the retail only pays their pro rata share of what's left over? There's so many different allocations and ways of those costs trickling down and not being netted out, where a tenant can be overcharged very easily.
Well, what you're talking about is comparing an income stream versus a cost stream.
Mm-hmm.
So if the parking garage is owned and operated, I guess it really doesn't have to be operated, but even you'd have to consider whether or not it's being operated by a third party. And how does that affect cost for the parking garage? Because if it's being operated by a third party, it is akin to a lease. It's probably just a license, not a lease. But if it's a license, should the costs associated with the parking garage be attributed to the office or retail tenants?
Correct. And then the revenue, as you said, the revenue stream at night – so folks, say, parking for a baseball game, that they're paying, you know, $40, $50 or whatever it is to park there, and that's a big cash cow for the landlord.
Well, it could be the landlord or the operator. It really depends, because I've seen situations where the landlord, although they own the parking garage, they simply license it out to an operator, a third-party operator, who then has the right and the ability to use it for event parking or subleasing it for car detailing, whatever the case may be. It's the operator's opportunity to maximize their income. I mean, you have that situation. But if you operate like that, then the question is, should those expenses
– from the third party.
Yeah, those expenses really end up being an expense akin to – internal expenses of your own premises. So it really does become complicated. I agree with you, and I think most people don't really pay attention to things like that. Point is that talking about lease auditing for mixed use is a whole series of new complications that you really have to be more alert to. So riddle me this. If the owner of the building and parking garage licenses the parking garage to an operator who manages and controls the entire parking garage, are the office and retail tenants responsible for the cost of cleaning the parking garage? Are those going to be common area maintenance charges? And is the landlord carving out the sweeper and the sweeper services for other portions of the common area versus the garage? Interesting question. Think about that. Now, last but not least is Jennifer Romano. And this was really, and I do mean last but not least, Jennifer's interview was very nice, and I think this is a great way to end the show with Jennifer. Jennifer is a litigation attorney in Los Angeles, and Jennifer is also going to be speaking at the NRTA conference, primarily on litigation matters. So let's see what Jennifer is going to be talking about.
Well, I will be speaking on two different topics, actually. The first topic is a presentation I'll be doing with my partner, Greg Call, in Kroll & Moring San Francisco office. It's called Litigating Lease Disputes, and this, I believe, is our third or fourth year presenting on this course, although the course changes every year. And essentially, Greg and I have been going to this conference for many years, and we noticed that there wasn't a class that really practically focused on taking all the legal issues addressed at the conference and discussing how they fit in actual litigation. So we designed this course a few years back, and we always start off with a hypothetical. It's a hypothetical lease dispute, and usually something that the audience has pretty much experienced in some form or another. So we've had a co-tenancy hypothetical, we've had a operating cost hypothetical, we've had a co-participation hypothetical, and we start off with the hypothetical, we take some time giving some real facts, talking about the dispute, and then we split up the class in half. One side's going to be the landlord, one side's going to be the tenant, and we walk all the way from the demand letter stage to filing a complaint, to responding to the complaint. We talk about the discovery each side would want to take in the case. We have mock depositions where we have somebody on the landlord side get deposed for just a couple of minutes, somebody on the tenant side get deposed. And then we talk about summary judgment, getting the case dismissed as a matter of law by each side.
Okay, let me just step out of the conversation for a second and explain what a summary judgment motion is and what a summary judgment is. It is kind of as it sounds, summary judgment. This is where one party to the lawsuit can get a judgment before trial because there are no issues in dispute. I'm not going to go into any other detail, but basically the court goes, well, there's no dispute here. Let me just come up with the numbers. Now let's get back to Jennifer.
We talk about what trial might look like, and we talk about how you might want to settle the case even before trial. And it's really a very fun, lively class, very interactive, and pretty much standing room only the last few years we've done it, which I expect is why the NRTA has asked us to do it again this year.
So it's perfectly fine if I come there and I start throwing raspberries from the landlord's side.
Well, you can't throw raspberries, but we love it if you come and you can sit on the landlord's side and you can give us all your arguments, because that's really what makes it fun. And it's really fun for all of these attendees who primarily work in their retailers. They're on the tenant side, to have to sit on the landlord's side and really think about the landlord's position and articulate it. It's really very eye-opening to be able to do that and try to sit in the other side's shoes. So we might make you sit on the tenant's side if you come.
Well, I've been on the tenant's side. I've been a director of real estate on the tenant's side. So I've been on both sides, but I think that it's a great class. One of the things, and I know that you'll agree with me, one of the things that you always want to do, and this sounds what you're doing in the class, is you would want your clients to sit in your shoes. This is what I see, so that you understand what we have to deal with and why we do discovery and what our direction is on discovery. You know, what are we trying to accomplish with the words? Why we pay attention to the questions that we ask in request for admissions, because we're looking for a particular response. We're looking to eliminate issues.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. And let me tell you a little bit about the second class we're doing, because it's somewhat related. It's another litigation-focused class. This one I'm doing with an individual named Bill Devine, who's back on the East Coast, and he is a litigator also who represents retailers. This one is 10 pitfalls to avoid in pre-litigation disputes. And this is a top 10 list of things that retailers should be focused on when they're dealing with the landlords prior to litigation, so they don't lose the litigation before it's even filed.
And could you really give me some of them?
Yeah, well, I'll give you a few. Yeah. For example, waiving the privilege, waiving the attorney-client privilege. A lot of times retailers will hire a consultant or an auditor to look through the bills, do an audit with the landlord, do an analysis. And sometimes that auditor is brought into the fold a little bit too much by the in-house folks. And all correspondence then starts including the auditor.
Yeah.
At the company, it's including the attorneys and the auditor and the decision to file suit. And you might have a potential problem there in terms of waiving the privilege on those communications, especially if you want that auditor to be testifying as a witness or expert later on in the case. So that is a real critical one. We have obviously 9 others, but another one is to preserve your documents once you know there's a dispute. Because that can be an issue too. You don't want to be accused of spoliation accidentally, of course, if you don't preserve your documents once you know there is a potential for litigation in the case. And just one more is to actually, you know, focus on the good stuff pre-litigation. Think about your case. Focus on your arguments. You actually have an opportunity to make very good evidence in a pre-litigation dispute, as you are sending letters back and forth with the landlord and trying to get them to admit things and stating your points. And if you are focused and really think about the issues at that point, you can create good evidence that can actually be presented to the jury later.
So if this might be self-serving, but what's the best way? We don't have to go into the other 7 items. I forgot how many you gave to me already. But what is the best way to ensure that you do all of them?
Well, I think for the most part, it's education. And that's what the NRTA conference is all about, is education, bringing all of these absolute experts in the field together. And when I say experts, I'm including the presenters. I'm also including all the people that work in the real estate departments at retailers day in and day out. These are experts. And bringing them all together and talking about these issues, nothing specific to particular retailers, but no one needs to reveal trade secrets, and in fact, couldn't and wouldn't. But just talking about these legal issues and sharing ideas and thoughts on them, you are planting those concepts in your mind. So as you do your day-to-day work, whether you're a lawyer or a lease administrator or an auditor, you are thinking about these things, thinking about your disputes in a little bit of a different way, and in the end, preparing your case for litigation, for trial, even without knowing that you're doing it.
Now, what I would have said, bring your attorney in before it becomes a problem.
Well, you know what? I'd like to say that too. That's a little shameless promotion. But also, you know, a lot of our retailer clients, in fact, pretty much all of them, they have counsel in their companies. And so, yes, bring them involved. Get them involved. And they oftentimes are.
So there you have it. You really should be attending the National Retail Tenants Association Annual Conference, which, again, is going to be in Palm Desert, California at the Marriott Desert Springs. from October 7th through October 10th, 2012. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank my speakers and guests for this show, Paul Kinney, Rick Burke, Debbie Ravel, Greg Ankenman, Muzz Birdie, and Jennifer Romano. So until our next show, this is Howard Klein. Roger, why don't you close out the show for us?
This has been CRE Radio with Howard Klein. If you have a question or a topic you would like to discuss, Howard can be reached at 949-288-3707. That's area 949-288-3707. Or by email to howard@creradio.com. CRE Radio is a live and recorded radio show accessible from both the web and your smartphone. Visit creradio.com to download any broadcast anytime or to receive newsletters and updates from Howard. CRE Radio broadcasts are presented on an informational basis only, with the sole intent of educating our listeners. Howard and his guest conversations specifically do not intend to offer legal advice. If you need legal advice, we recommend you seek out your own counsel. Remember, laws and practices may vary from state to state. Please listen again next time to CRE Radio with Howard Klein. Unauthorized editing or copying of portions of this show without the express written consent of CRE Radio is strictly prohibited. All rights reserved.
That's a wrap.